Yes, hello. I greet you, and let me first express that I really would have liked much, much better to talk to you in person. And unfortunately, a little accident prevented me from coming, but I hope we can talk about these issues this electronic way. Now, there is something very, very fantastic happening in the world right now, and those of you in America who are only dependent on the mainstream media may have absolutely no inkling of it because the mainstream media are not reporting about the fact that a completely new economic system is emerging, and it is emerging with extremely rapid speed, and more than half of humanity is already participating in it. First slide, please. Now, the new system has been initiated. Do you have the first slide, please? Has been initiated by the leaders of the BRICS nations at the Fortaleza summit in Brazil in last July. Next slide. And there they proceeded very quickly to establish the New Silk Road and the Maritime Silk Road and a whole system of relations with South America, with ASEAN countries, with African countries, and in the recent period, even with European countries. And this new model is basically establishing a completely new system of relations, is what the Chinese President Xi Jinping often calls it's a win-win policy, or even a win-win-win policy, depending how many parties are participating in these projects. And it is based on the idea that through the development of basic infrastructure, of scientific and technological cooperation, and an increase in connectivity among these nations, that this will lead to the mutual benefit of all participating countries. Now, at this annual summit of the Boao Forum on the island of Hainan, the Boao Forum is the equivalent, the Asian equivalent of what normally takes place in Davos in Switzerland. Except that the difference is in Davos, you have a lot of bankers and a lot of monetarists coming together, while this Boao Forum brought together many, many leaders, especially of Asia, who were all interested in real economic development, in infrastructure and cooperation. And there, at this forum, President Xi Jinping announced what they are now calling the One Belt, One Road, which is simply another word for the New Silk Road, or as we called it, the Eurasian Land Bridge in the past, and announced a global perspective for development. This includes huge infrastructure programs, corridors, high-speed railway, waterways, and ports. And this report was declared to be the official policy by the National Development and Reform Commission, as well as the Foreign Ministry and the Commerce Ministry of China. Go back to the second slide, please. As you can see here, this is a vast, vast network of corridors connecting China, Central Asia, Russia, all the way to Europe. Then another set of corridors from Central Asia to West Asia into the Gulf and the Mediterranean. Then the 21st century maritime Silk Road involves sea and land corridors from China to Southeast Asia, to South Asia, to the Indian Ocean, and to the Pacific. Then other corridors go over land from China to Mongolia to Russia. Another one to Bangladesh, China, India, and Myanmar. So, what goes along with that is a whole new system, a really world new system of banks and financial credit institutions to finance these and other projects. Now, people were grounded about the sea change, which took recently place when the AIIB went into the final negotiation, who would be among the founding members, basically, which concluded a couple of days ago. And lo and behold, the AIIB had 57 founding members. Now, the United States government, misjudging the situation dramatically, put utmost pressure on their allies and also developing countries under no circumstances to be part of the AIIB. And despite this heavy pressure from the US, the first country in Europe to join was, of all places, Great Britain, the firm ally of the United States. And when Great Britain joined, you had a complete avalanche of countries going in the same direction, wanting to become founding members of the AIIB. Germany, France, Italy, Luxembourg, Switzerland, Austria, all the Scandinavian countries, and naturally Australia, South Korea, New Zealand, and many other Asian countries. Now, China was very emphatic to point out the fact that despite the fact that the AIIB obviously has been created as a supplement to the IMF and the World Bank, that China does not want to turn the AIIB into a geopolitical confrontation with the United States. And they reiterated both from the government and also leading Chinese publications many times the offer that the United States and European countries should join the AIIB, the New Development Bank, and also the projects of the New Silk Road and the Maritime Silk Road. Because China is developing a new model of international relationships, which is all-inclusive, which is overcoming and superseding the concept of geopolitics, which after all was the basis for two world wars in the second, in the 20th century. Now, the New Development Bank, which is also a similar bank created by the BRICS in Fortaleza in Brazil last year, it was decided to found it, will be functioning this year in July at the next BRICS summit, which will take place in Ufa in Russia. So at that point, you will have basically two operational large infrastructure banks. But then you also have the new Silk Road Development Fund, which has $40 billion. The AIIB and the New Development Bank have initial capital of $100 billion each, but that is just the beginning starting capital. The new Silk Road Fund has $40 billion. The new Maritime Silk Road Fund, $20 billion. But then also the countries of the South Asian region, the SAARC countries, are planning to build their own development bank. The Shanghai Cooperation Organization is building a new bank. And then these countries have jointly decided to create something which is called the Contingency Reserve Arrangement. Now, this is a pool of currency reserves of $100 billion initially, which was obviously a response to the speculation which speculators such as George Soros conducted during the Asia crisis of 1997, where the currencies of Asian countries were speculated in 1 week down by 80% by such people as George Soros, for example. And obviously also to the 2008 almost meltdown of the financial system in the Lehman Brothers crisis. So what these countries of the BRICS and related organizations are now doing is they have created the contingency reserve arrangement to protect participating countries against speculative attacks if new financial crises are to come, and they are shortly to come. It was also the reaction to the fact that the US Congress absolutely refused to change the rules of the IMF and the World Bank after the 2008 countries. Now, so these parallel financial organizations were characterized by Mrs. Denise Leung, from the Finance Center of the World Resource Institute this morning in the German government radio, Deutsche Welle, and this woman said, development is absolutely not possible without the AIIB and the new development bank. Because in Asia alone, there is a need for infrastructure investment until the year 2020 of $8.22 trillion. Now, the entire investment of the World Bank in 2014 is only $24.2 billion, and of the Asia Development Bank, only $21 million. So obviously the AIIB, the New Development Bank, and all the other banks I named have to fill this gap. And obviously to have such independent financial institutions will give the developing countries also a much greater voice in determining their own economic policy in the advantage of their own population. Now obviously, the aim, explicitly and stated so by several BRICS leaders, is to use these banks to eradicate poverty from the surface of the planet in a very short period of time. And in Asia alone, you have presently over 700 million people who are still living below the poverty level. Now, Prime Minister Modi has made several absolutely exciting speeches where he declared it a national objective of India to eradicate poverty from the Indian nation. Also, President Xi Jinping has proudly announced repeatedly that the Chinese economic miracle, which is nobody can deny one of the greatest miracles in terms of economics ever in the history of economies, because China was able to have an economic development in 30 years, what most industrial nations in Europe, in the United States and elsewhere needed 100 or even 200 years to accomplish. And Xi Jinping has announced that kind of development, which has now transformed the poor population of the coastal regions and the southern parts of China, to bring that into the inner regions and into the western parts of China, which, you know, are mostly desert and therefore it's not so easy, but to use this Chinese economic miracle as the model for the new Silk Road for every country which participates in these projects to repeat exactly what China has been accomplished. Now, the Neue Zürcher Zeitung, which is the major Swiss financial daily, had this morning an article with the headline, Gold Rush Mood Thanks to New Silk Road. Investors are rushing to buy stocks in Chinese state-owned enterprises. They are investing in the New Silk Road. Now, I have to say there is a certain amount of confusion in the editorial board of Neue Zürcher Zeitung because they are looking at these developments with the spectacles of monetarism. But obviously, this is not what this is at all, because the AIIB, the New Development Bank, and the other institutions are credit institutions and are not part of the casino economy of Wall Street or the City of London or Frankfurt for that matter. But they go very explicitly back to the principles of the first Secretary of Treasury of the United States, Alexander Hamilton, who created the first national bank and with that a credit financing institution for the real economy. And that first national bank and that credit system was the basis for the gigantic industrial revolution which occurred in the United States. And it was the policy to which good American presidents always returned, such as Lincoln with the greenback policy or Franklin D. Roosevelt with the New Deal and the Glass-Steagall separation and the Reconstruction Finance Corporation, which happened to be not only the motor for the United States to overcome the depression in the 30s, but it was also in the form of the Kreditanstalt für Wiederaufbau, the basis for the German economic miracle in the post-war reconstruction of Germany. Now, as Dennis already mentioned, this was also the basis of the proposal by Lyndon LaRouche to create an international development bank, which he made in 1975, and for which this organization has campaigned practically in all the years since. And, you know, we have now the development that this idea to have a development bank, which is only there to finance development, is coming into reality. Now, this is extremely urgent because the transatlantic region is based on a completely different idea, namely the profit maximization of the casino, and that is totally bankrupt. And it is about to bust. Now, the recently published Beige Book of the Federal Reserve, which is estimated to reflect a complete denial of reality by European economists, in fact, you know, pretends that there is an upswing in the United States, but what it shows, the real figures show, and these figures are still manipulated, that you have a collapse of the real economy in the United States. The New York Manufacturing Index just went down by 1.19 points to only 6.9 points. The Industrial Order Index went down by 2.4 points to 6.8 points. The Employment Index collapsed from 18.6 to 9.6%. So even by the fraudulent statistics of the Fed, the real economy is shrinking. But the real crisis is naturally that the too big to fail banks have a derivative exposure which is today 40 to 80% larger than it was in 2008 at the point of the collapse of Lehman Brothers. And the world, this system could detonate at any moment, for example, if the Fed would go to increase the interest rate just a tiny amount, that derivative bubble would almost certainly explode. And if the European Union continues their hardline against Greece, a policy which is supported also by German Finance Minister Schäuble, and drives Greece out of the Eurozone, which is now on its way. For example, Standard & Poor's just downgraded Greece from the B level, creditworthiness from level B minus to level CC, C plus, triple C plus, which is already junk bond level. Now, therefore, in reality, we are looking at the upcoming explosion of the financial system of the transatlantic sector. And these new banks are actually the lifeboat for a sinking Titanic. The problem of the transatlantic sector could be solved very easily if the United States would go back to the Glass-Steagall separation of the bank law, which was introduced by Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1933 and repealed only in 1999. And that, by the way, makes the presidential campaign of the presidential candidate Martin O'Malley the most important campaign, because he has said that the first action he would take if he were to be elected into the White House would be the implementation of Glass-Steagall, protect the commercial banks and separate the investment banks and do not finance them anymore through quantitative easing or through so-called rescue packages, and they would go bankrupt if they would be forced to rely on their own system. Now, it is therefore, and because there is a connection between the pending collapse of the Wall Street banks, the City of London banks, and other related banks, there is a relation to the increasing war danger, which we have discussed many times, but, you know, the empire collapse is what is driven by the pending collapse of the banks, and the war danger in Ukraine and the Middle East comes from that. Therefore, it is a life and death question of civilization that we get the United States and the European nations to join with the BRICS, to join with the new Silk Road, and join the win-win perspective as a conscious war avoidance policy. Because if all the countries of Europe, the United States, and the BRICS countries, to which, for example, Russia belongs, are working together in these large projects, then and only then can you overcome the reason of war. Because war has always occurred as a result of geopolitics, and we have to get the United States off the idea of the project of a new American century doctrine, which was introduced by the neocons at the end of the 90s, which is the idea that they will not allow one nation or a group of nations to ever become stronger than the United States. So therefore, let's look at the reality of the situation. Not only is the transatlantic sector about to experience a bigger blowout of the system than in 2008, the most dramatic situation we have right now in California and in the entire southwest of the United States, where you have a prolonged drought and a huge water shortage. On the 12th of March, there was an op-ed in the Los Angeles Times by Jay Famiglietti, who from the NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and he said that California today has only for about 1 year water supplies left in its reservoirs. You can see here on this picture drought emptying the reservoirs and also reducing the snow caps, which means, you know, there will be no water flowing into these reservoirs and other water systems. And what was the reaction of Governor Brown? He, about a week ago, announced a mandatory cut of water usage of 25%, except for agriculture and fracking. I mean, this completely insane method of production of shale gas and oil. Now, already over 500,000 acres remained unplanted in the last year, and it probably will be more than 1 million acres which will not be used for agriculture this year. Several towns in California are already out of water. And soon you will see a migration of people out of the largest and most productive state in the United States. So when we recently, about a week ago, presented in the state legislature in Sacramento the revolutionary new concept how to deal with this water crisis, which has been worked by Ben Denniston and Lynn LaRouche with the science team he is working together with, we had a very unusual, shocking experience. Because when we presented this revolutionary proposal of Ben Denniston to Mr. O'Connor, who is the principal consultant to the State Senate Committee for Natural Resources and Water, and we had, you know, we went there with the expectation that they would be happy to find people concerned with solving the water crisis. The reaction, which was a complete hysterical a denial that there is a water shortage, there is a cyclic development of weather patterns over thousands of years, that, you know, the drought is not the result of a anthropogenic dealings of mankind, he completely freaked out. And what Ben Denniston had proposed, and you know, he will elaborate this later on himself, that you can have a combination of measures like desalinization of ocean water with the help of nuclear energy, in the tradition of what Roosevelt did with the Tennessee Valley Authority like managing and changing the Colorado River and similar proposals. But also you could revive aspects of Navapa, that is bringing down the plentiful water from Alaska and Canada along the Rocky Mountains through a system of channels all the way to Mexico, or use the fact that 90% of all precipitation does not occur over land but over oceans, and that you could use the ionization of moisture in the atmosphere over the Pacific Ocean to develop more water. Now, recent studies focused very much on the high energy galactic cosmic rays in controlling the ionization of the lower atmosphere. And that seems to influence the cloud formation and is also catalyzing the condensation of water vapor in the atmosphere. That method has already been tested and applied by several countries in the world. But it was very clear that this Mr. O'Connor had absolutely no interest to even listen to these proposals. And then by reviewing what the problem was, we found, which we had already known before, but it became now in the context of the reduction of the water use in California, crystally clear what is the intention. The same too big to fail banks, which are about to blow, including the different members of the Bush family, the American multi-billionaire T-Bone Pickens. All of these people had invested in the last 5 to 10 years enormous amounts of money into everything which has to do with water. Land, which is over aquifers, lakes, but also water pumps, chemicals to purify water, membranes, bottled water, just everything which has to do with water, and not only in the United States, but all over the world. So it is very clear that what they have been trying to do is to corner the water market in order, you know, to speculate on the scarcity of water, on rising prices, totally disregarding what will be the effect on depopulation, of destruction of agriculture, of increase of food prices, of actually killing people. And there is no question that this is a Nazi policy, because you see the same support of Nazi policies in Ukraine. You see it in the absolutely anti-human policy of the Troika in Greece, destroying one-third of the Greek economy, and you see it naturally in the absolute horrendous condition of the developing countries. Now, the consequence what these people take into account is the death of millions and millions of poor people. Please go to the next slide. Here on this slide, you see the world deserts, which actually grow from the Atlantic coast of Africa all the way through the Sahel zone, the Sahara, the Pan-Arab Peninsula, the Middle East, all the way to China, and naturally in the southwest of America. Now, but there are two completely different approaches how you deal with that. You have the speculation on the scarcity of water on the side of Wall Street and the City of London and other speculators. But then if you contrast that with what China has been doing, China has, please go to the next slide, in the recent years developed two largest water projects in the world. There is on the one side the Three Gorges Dam, which tamed the water of the Yangtze and has turned this into the largest power production facility in the world, producing 22.5 gigawatts per year. And naturally, it has protected millions, thousands of people from drought and from drowning every year, and it established efficient flood control. And then secondly, you have the South-North Water Transfer Diversion Program, of which two of the three parts have already been completed. Now, the eastern route of this project, which brings water from the very water-rich spring region of the Yangtze River to Anhui and Shandong and Jiangsu provinces, basically filling up on the one side the Yellow River and using irrigation from there. And then secondly, the middle road, a route which brings water to Beijing and Tianjin. These two routes are already bringing large amounts of water to the dry areas, while the western route is still in the phase of planning. But China is not the only country which is taking this productive approach. At the recent meeting of the SAARC summit, Indian Prime Minister Modi presented a similar program for India. Next slide. It is the idea of linking the Sharda River, which flows in the Himalayas, and brings it north-south along the India-Nepal border and brings waters of the Yamuna River, which flows from west to the east in the Ganga Valley. And all of this goes back to the Indira Gandhi National Water Development Authority, which she established in 1982. And this was the time when we worked with her together on a 40-year development perspective for India. And this was naturally not carried out because of her assassination, but it was a gigantic project which had the idea of having 30 rivers linked through channels, creating 3,000 storage structures, projects which would create 34 gigawatts of hydropower, which would have provided 35 million hectares for the agricultural use of land. It would have transferred 175 billion cubic meter of water per year, and naturally massively increased the food production, protected the population against floods and droughts. Now, Prime Minister Modi has revived all of this, and he has created a task force on interlinking of these rivers. He announced plans to convert 101 rivers into transport channels, which will cut the transport cost by 30% and naturally increase the capacity gigantically. With that together goes that several desalinization plants at the coast in the coastal state of Tamil Nadu, and it also involves the plan to connect 14 rivers from the Himalayas to 16 other ones across the Indian Peninsula, adding 35 million hectares of irrigated land and 34,000 megawatt of electricity. That is three times as much as you need to provide electricity for New York City. Now, obviously, there are many, many areas in the world which need that approach taken by China and India, and which is lacking right now in California. For example, the same approach must be taken for the Aral Lake, which has shrunk to only 5%. No, the Aral Lake. We don't have a slide of that. This is creating immense tensions between Tajikistan and Kyrgyzstan, who have access to about several rivers first before they flow on to Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, and Uzbekistan. Naturally, tensions exist between these countries. It must be taken, next slide, to the Lake Chad, which has shrunk to less than 10% of its previous levels, and for which we have proposed for a very long time the Transacqua plan, which has been worked out by the Italian physicist Dr. Vicky, which has the idea to take the abundant water actually too much water from the Congo River and bring it up through a system of channels and canals into the Lake Chad, which obviously would transform the life of millions of people. And obviously, this is not an option, but a bitter necessity. Because right now, we hear every week the horrendous reports about thousands of people trying to flee over the Mediterranean from Africa and naturally also from Syria and Iraq. And many hundreds of them are drowning every week. And the EU has nothing better than to chase these people back and to try to prevent them from coming, which underlines once more the complete moral bankruptcy of the EU. Now, next slide, the World Land Bridge. Therefore, you know, this proposal, which we have produced over a year studies and which we published end of last year, this is a 370-page study which not only outlines all the future projects, the tunnels, bridges, corridors which are needed to turn the present world situation into a coherent, connected world land bridge. It also has all the scientific, or a lot of the scientific conceptions provided by the scientific method of Mr. LaRouche of physical economy, of the need why an increase in the energy flux density in the production process is the absolute necessary way to go, and why only with these principles can you provide food and livelihood for the increased population in the world, and the increase in the relative population density is the law of the universe, and all of that you will find in this report. Next slide. Now, if you look at the various projects, which I only want to identify here very, very briefly, is a network of bridges, tunnels, and channels connecting the five continents of the world, actually turning it into a coherent world transport and infrastructure system, so that in a few years you could travel, for example, from the southern tip of Latin America, of South America, by Maglev train, all the way up through the Americas, through the Bering Strait, all the way to the Cape of Good Hope in Africa, or to Indonesia, if you want to take a different route. And that would be faster than to go by ship presently. Now, projects of this include, for example, the second Panama Canal, which started to be built in Nicaragua. This is here number one on the map. This already started last December with the help of China. It's a 278-long channel. Then number two is the building of the Bering Strait Tunnel. Can you please now show the map from London to New York? This has been recently proposed by the head of Russian Railway, Vladimir Yakunin, which is to build a fast railway system from London all the way to the Bering Strait, and then from there to New York. And that has been adopted as the official policy of Russia. Now, obviously, what is lacking right now is the American commitment, but I think that that is what we are campaigning for to be adopted. Number three on this map is the tunnel of connecting the Sakhalin and Hokkaido, the Sakhalin Island with Russia, which is supposed to be a tunnel of 7.3 kilometers. Number four, the Sakhalin-Hokkaido tunnel or bridge, which will be 45 kilometers. Number seven is the tunnel connecting the Bohai Bay, shortening the distance to 100 kilometers, connecting two Chinese cities, Dalian and Shantai. Number 10 is the building of the Kra Canal, which is supposed to be an alternative to the Malacca Strait, which is completely overworked. Number 12 is the expansion of the Suez Canal, which is happening with very fast speed with the help of the new Al-Sisi government in Egypt, which has completely transformed that country and caused total excitement of the population. Then please show the slide of the European extension of the Eurasian land bridge. Now, this is a part of the world land bridge which we have produced in 2012, when it became clear that the policy of the Troika transformed all of Southern Europe, Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal, into economic desert zones, reducing the real economy of Greece, for example, by one third, causing two thirds of unemployment of the youth, increasing the death rate, increasing the suicide rate. The same picture for Italy and Spain and Portugal. And it was the idea to extend the new Silk Road Eurasian land bridge into Spain, into the Balkans, and then from there build bridges and tunnels into Africa and connect it with the extension of the new Silk Road into Africa. Now, this is obviously all in the documents of the World Land Bridge, and I can only advise you, you should acquire this report, because this is blueprint for the next decades of human civilization. Now, Xi Jinping announced at the Boao conference the principles of this new policy, which basically is the five principles of the Bandung conference of the non-aligned movement from 1955. It is in complete cohesion with the UN Charter. It is based on the respect of international law. It is the idea of non-interference, respect for the sovereignty of the other country, the respect for the difference in the social system of the other country, and to base the policy on the maximum development of the other, which happens to be also the principles of the Peace of Westphalia and international law. Now, Xi Jinping made a speech at that occasion where he said, "We have only one planet, and countries share that one world. To do well in Asia and the world, we cannot do without each other. What China therefore needs most is a harmonious and stable domestic environment and a peaceful and tranquil international environment. Turbulence and war runs against the fundamental interest of the Chinese people. China has suffered from turbulence and war for more than a century since modern times, and the Chinese people would never want to inflict the same tragedy on other countries or peoples. History has taught us that no country that tried to achieve its goal with force ever succeeded." The proof of that, obviously, is the condition of Iraq, of Syria, of Libya, of Ukraine, and many other countries in Africa, for example. Now, what we have to accomplish, therefore, is to make an all-out effort to convince the United States and the European nations that they should join with the BRICS and with the new Silk Road policy. Now, I believe that we have come to a point in human history where either we bring the political and economic order in cohesion with the real laws of the universe, of the physical universe, or we are threatened to extinct ourselves in a nuclear annihilation. However, I think that in all great traditions, you have this idea about that the laws of the universe must be a guidance for our political order on the planet. You find that idea beautifully developed in the Confucian tradition of 2,500 years of Chinese history, the idea that politics must follow the mandate of heaven, that there must be a harmony of all nations based on the idea of love, which is the Confucian notion of Ren, and that each nation must fulfill its right place and its right task in this alliance, which is in the notion of Li. That same idea you find in Hinduism, that the cosmic order must be implemented on the planet, in the political order. You find it also in the Christian humanist tradition of the European culture, of which, after all, America is a part. It's based on the idea that concordance in the macrocosm can only exist if all microcosms develop in an appropriate and fashionable way, promoting the interest of the other as if it would be their own. So I think we have an unbelievable optimistic situation. It is full of dangers. We are, you know, threatened with World War III very immediately, but the solution is there. I mean, if we get the United States to really become back a republic as it was intended by the founding fathers, as it was established by Alexander Hamilton, and the idea of a national bank and a credit system, as it was promoted by John Quincy Adams, who had the idea that America must be a republic in an alliance of sovereign republics, as it was reconstituted by Abraham Lincoln, and naturally by Franklin D. Roosevelt, and as it was echoed by John F. Kennedy, I think we have to revive that American tradition, and then I think Europe will follow, because as you could see with the rush into the AIIB and the excitement about Modi, about China in general in Europe, I think we could really turn the tide. And I want to ask all of you to join in this effort.